Alright, time for another draftphysics.com. Debatephysics.com also, but nobody to debate, unfortunately. Everybody just does all this preaching crap, and, you know, there's very little trials taking place where the arguments have to be argued and answered and all of that. So instead, it's just all ignored, and people just stay on their bandwagons playing their, you know, she'll be coming round a mountain, you know, play their songs and don't bother listening or fulfilling their obligation to argue against, you know, and actually provide some sort of coherent explanation for what people present as a counter-argument. So in this video, I'm going to counter-argue the existence of these long waves, these electromagnetic waves. And the idea is that, you know, you could go theoretically very, very small, you know, infinitely small, but technically you could have something called an infinitely large wave, you know, as big as the universe. And how exactly would that be accomplished? So the small end, you can sort of explain that, nah, there sort of is a Planck distance in the universe. There is no, you know, half of the half of the half of the half of the half. That doesn't happen. The universe is made out of a real space, and the real space runs out. You can't just keep dividing it in half. You can call that a Planck thing, or you can call it something else, but that exists. So anyway, as part of this, you know, the Kurt Jamungal contest, you know, all the entries are this wacky religious shit, really. I mean, it's just, you know, this is a UFO nut, has 63,000 subscribers, and it's just so depressing. Just talking absolute Gaia gooey monstrous shit, and yeah, gets away with it. Yeah, so anyway, they sent me two videos I'm supposed to review. One of them the guy took down, and I'm supposed to review his paper that's like 76 pages long, and it starts with some God premise, you know. This is science. Sorry, not even close. So anyway, it's just so depressing. You know, just so depressing. So anyway, so you know, this is all the jargon. This is, you know, this is what physics has done. Conventional physics talks this wooey crap. It allows people to take this, you know, the little grain of truth they say, and you know, just, you know, you give them an inch, they'll create a mile of fable and storytelling. You know, well, even the very fact that the UFO thing is still alive, and here we are in this age where we have cameras everywhere, you know, and they haven't improved their evidence any at all. It's just so bad. It's just depressing. That's all I can say. I find it very depressing. So anyway. So let's talk about a little bit about wave particle duality, the idea that they, hence physicists insist that we must think of electromagnetic radiation. All right, so it's not electromagnetic. Frankly, there's only one field. It's called charge, and we know that charges exist. All right, in the form of protons and electrons, and that they do an opposite thing, okay? They behave completely inversely to each other in whatever circumstance you're going to create. But the truth is that, yes, you can polarize an atom. That is, an atom can become lopsided, all right? So it can have electrons close, you know. So here's the nucleus that's net positive, and you have these negative elements floating about. And well, I should do a Sabine Hossenfelder video where she explains. Oh, geez, this is so bad. Anyway, I mean, they can't even get the atom right, you know. So what hope is there they get anything else right? I suppose I should move this over just so you can see some of this crap. So obviously this would create a kind of polarization. I mean, I've made the argument before that, see, I can put this pen here and I can block most of me. I could block all of me, really, you know, if I put it in the right place. There, I'm blocked. Or I can put the pen here and my face is the dominant thing. So if you think of the nucleus of the atom as being a positive charge, you can sort of understand that that charge can mean something or it can mean nothing, depending on where the electron is. So, I mean, I hate to talk physics, but, you know, that's physics. That's a physical circumstance. We could sort of understand that, yeah. So if you change the shape of an atom, what you end up doing, you know, is here you're creating positive, and here you're creating negative. So depending on how you turn that atom or what perspective you're looking at that atom, you're going to see a different thing, okay? You're going to see something that behaves this way, or you're going to see something that behaves this way in terms of whatever it's admitting. And they're admitting something, yes. I would argue they're just admitting a reflection of what hits them. But this is, the mathematics pretty much says this is what they look like, little radiators. All right. The mathematics, they say, is so proven. Well, anyway. All right. So somehow these things are creating, okay, what we call electromagnetic spectrum. So somehow they're creating this, you know, wavy crap, you know, going both ways thingy. Okay. Part of it's going this way, part of it's going this way, you know, whatever, you can draw it, you know, different ways to understand it. And they're saying this is a magnetic component and this is an electric component. And, you know, even though their math really says you can't draw it like this because the electrical component's huge and the magnetic component is so minor, you wouldn't even see it. But they ignore all that just because drawing is so much more important than facts. But anyway, so this is the wave, right? And the theory is, okay, let's not talk about the very small, because you can understand an electron making a very small movement, you know, just tiny movements. Very quickly, you could sort of understand something can oscillate very, so I could have something oscillating, and then I can make the space it oscillates in smaller and smaller, and I can make it move faster and faster and faster. And so we can make devices, you know, electronic devices, where little pieces of the device are actually vibrating at these incredibly, you know, gigahertz vibration speeds. So, yeah, whatever the smallest is, it's really small, okay? So, yes, a little tiny movement. Now, I would argue that a single atom can't produce a photon, you know, just can't do it, because photons are made of more than the components of more than one atom. That's how electricity is created. Electricity is an event that takes place. More than one atom carries the electricity. It has to be a transfer of energy between atoms. And so to cause it, you need to do that. You need to affect more than one atom. And frankly, when it's going to cause something, it needs to send energy from more than one electron. But regardless, conventional physics says so. It says it's just a single electron moves and a photon pops out. They never proved that to anybody. They never, you know, gave you a big volume of evidence to demonstrate any of that. They just say it. Okay, fine. All right, so what are we really saying? See, I'm going to argue something simple. Okay, the universe is full of junk stuff. The light that's hitting you right now. And that, again, I can illustrate it with just my hand. I can show you, okay, the inverse square law. First, I can show you that. I can go half the distance, my hand will get four times bigger. And I can also show you the idea that if I move into a field of stuff, that I'm going to collect it. It's coming against me, it's going to reflect, you know. If I'm moving into it, it's always reflecting at the same speed, so if I move into it, it can't reflect as far away from me the faster I'm going. And the faster I move into a field of stuff, the more I'm going to collect it, the more I'm going to compress it. It's going to end up in the same space. So stuff that's this far apart will end up this far apart. And behind me, stuff this far apart will end up this far apart, because it won't be able to, it will be reflecting off something leaving. You can sort of understand if one bullet reflects and the next bullet has to reflect all the way from over here, you know, that it's not going to reflect, you know, its reflection is going to be way behind the first one. So it's just kind of understanding if you were in a road race and you had to run across the finish line and then go back and then start over again, that you'd be way behind in the race. Well, the same thing happens. So every time an electron moves, the argument would be, is it sending a signal, you know, this frequency stuff? And that's all it is. It's a frequency. So let's understand this wave stuff is a wavelength and all that kind of stuff. Well, wavelength is just a period between events. It's a time period between events. It doesn't have to be known or thought of as a wave. Okay? It's not a wavelength. All right? It's a period between events. Same thing. It's exactly the same thing. So you can duplicate a frequency, okay, with a wave, or you can duplicate it with bullets. No problem. All right, so where was I? It was a key point there I wanted to make. Well, we'll find it eventually. So anyway, you're just compressing the field. Yes, so if the electron moves this way, you know, the argument is it's compressing the field going that way. So it's taking energy that was this far apart and it's making it this far apart or whatever. And the other way, it's expanding the field. So in a sense, it's creating two signals. One way it's sending a dash, and the other way it's sending a dot, you could say. You know, that kind of thing. It's sending a different kind of code. The exact opposite code. Okay, it's sending a compression, okay, or an expansion. You know, depending on which way you're looking again. So depending on which way you're positioned, you're going to see something exactly opposite. You're going to see a compression coming at you, or you're going to see an expansion coming at you. All right. So what would be the theory for a very long one of these field perturbations, these things they call, field theory, that there's some electromagnetic field that's being oscillated. So just understand that once you get to, you know, higher wavelengths, that you theoretically can have a wavelength that is one of these things, you know, these waves, that's a mile long. And so what are you really saying? That some part of the atom is moving so slowly, okay, you know, that it's got all this time, you know, that's it's creating this huge, gigantically tiny, subtle change in the environment because it's moving so slowly. And you know, do you really think so? And that you could have something that's miles long, a signal that's miles long, okay, made out of some little incremental bits of signal, you know, where there's a tiny bit more reflection, tiny bit more reflection, tiny bit more reflection, tiny bit more. You really think that's possible, that we would be able to detect all those little tiny, tiny, tiny changes in the position of something? So, you know, and that there's some field measuring all of that. Now, I could make arguments about how the field theory fails because you couldn't explain how any of this stuff could travel and where they wouldn't interfere with each other. So if it was traces in a field, you know, if you had a field and, you know, of stuff and you're X-ing and O-ing it, you know, you're compressing it and expanding the field, well, the expansions and contractions would hit each other all the time. And there'd be all kinds of interference. And there isn't any, especially, you know, except in the special case where I put two slits and all of a sudden light is interfering with light and banging into each other and destroying the light and all that crap. And it's crap, frankly, because it doesn't happen. There is no destructive interference. The energy isn't destroyed. The energy is still going exactly where it was going, and all you've done is put it out of phase and broken the radio signal, for example. So you can be traveling in your car, and you have competing Chicago and New York, you know, and you go right in between the two, and they're on the same frequency, and there's this place where you can't get either one. And, do you think the energy isn't hitting the antenna anymore? No, it's still hitting the antenna. You just can't turn it into a signal because you've confused the the receiver. The receiver doesn't know that it's two separate signals because they're on top of each other. All right. So you can't pick up one or the other. Where was I? Yeah, so the long wave doesn't make any sense in this field. It's somehow a vibration in the field. Somehow the field is measuring how much it went this way, so later it can push this way. Or there's no way you could say that the whole field is waiting on this very long wave. And the simple answer is, well, if I send bullets, it's really easy. I shoot a bullet, and then I wait a while. Okay, and I shoot another bullet. Okay, no problem. The field doesn't have to be a Einstein. It doesn't have to figure out any of this stuff. It's a clump. I shot one, and I just wait a while, and I shoot another one. So it's like the electron and the atom. It makes perfect sense that I can just change when the atom expands or contracts, when the atom changes its shape. Okay, and so every time the electron moves in one direction, okay, it'll send a compression. And so you'll have the stuff closer to each other, the bullets, little bits, and then every time it moves the other way. So, and I can just measure the time between the compressions, between when there's a compression, when the electron jiggled. So I can jiggle, and then I can wait an hour, and I can jiggle again, okay? And that signal, you can understand how that gets through space, how that signal's detectable, how that signal is just as good as, a signal that I do every 6 years would be just as strong as the signal I do every 6 milliseconds. Because the motion is exactly the same, and you're just saying, when did I make it move? So it's the Morse code, and you're just saying, I'll send a dot today, and 6 weeks from now, I'll send another dot. I'll push the key. And that signal will be just as strong, just as good, just as durable, just as transmittable as, as if I dot, 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 dot. Doesn't make any difference. The dots are the signal, the photon. And that makes so much more sense why this stuff can travel billions of light years through space at all kinds of different frequencies, and it's all durable. This is the simpler answer, and it's the better answer, because this creates a complication that you're never going to explain, how the field can have all this little tiny subtleties in it when the whole field is being created out of some idea that the field itself is oscillating, that the field has an elasticity to it. You have to create a whole mechanism for that. How does the rubber band know, how long ago you stretched it and all that kind of stuff? I guess a rubber band wouldn't be a great example, but you could compress the rubber band and then wait 6 years to release it. But in this case, you can't leave a compression in the space for 6 years. You can't have, this piece of space is compressed. We're going to leave it compressed for 6 years. And then all of a sudden we're going to say it's okay, you can collapse now. How could it possibly be represented in space that way? It wouldn't make any sense. And it's so easy if you just say, no, it's not the length of the wave isn't the signal. The time between the events is the signal. The period between events, that's the signal. And the event is the motion of an electron. And the motion of the electron can be fast or slow, yes. I would argue that the faster it is, the bigger it is. That just means it compressed more stuff. Doesn't mean that it's a longer or bigger signal. It just means that there's more stuff, in the signal, which would equate to the fact that the blue light does tend to have more energy than the red light, because the blue light had to be produced by a a motion that compresses more stuff because it's produced by a faster velocity, which indicates a further distance and a lot of other things. But just even if you move the same distance at the faster velocity, it just means you're automatically compressing more stuff because you're moving faster into a field of stuff, and you'll increase how much you cause the reflections to contract and end up stuck on the surface, so to speak. I mean, theoretically, if I move my hand the speed of light, I'll collect all the light. None of it will go faster than my hand when it reflects, and therefore all of it will be sitting here on the surface of my hand. Whenever I stop, I'll send all of that radiation that I collected through the whole movement, I'll send all of it to wherever that way is. You'll get it all at once. You won't get a wave. You won't get a little bit, more. No, you'll get a whole bunch all at once. All right. And that's the real physics, and this shit people talk is just so pathetic. So anyway, just to say something about this specific video, I mean, it's this Gaia crap where the people think because cities are, you know, have moving parts, therefore they're like a living thing. And, you know, there's absolutely no evidence. Yes, there could be a living thing like a virus. There could be a living thing like some single-celled organism, okay, and I said organism, that doesn't have a central processor, doesn't have a brain. It's not sentient. It's not conscious. You know, it's a little robot, a little mechanical device, but it's not at all like a human being, okay? It doesn't will anything. It doesn't want anything. It doesn't need anything. It doesn't feel anything. It doesn't do any of that stuff. It's a little mechanical machine without, you know, the illusion of consciousness. And they just automatically include anything that's alive as somehow full of the spirit, you know, some sort of bullshit that makes it aware. And it doesn't need a brain. a neuron-equipped brain. Because there's absolutely no evidence of a brain made out of anything else but neurons, frankly. There's no example of some other structure that is capable of doing the computer science of, you know, all the bit transfers of information that our brain does with neurons. All right. And so you don't have any parallels. There's nothing close to the same or similar or any of that stuff. Yes, we're a system. And the fact is our brain is almost independently evolving, just like our livers and our kidneys and all of that stuff. They all have code on the DNA molecule, and those codes are all independently, in a sense, evolving. And, but so what? My brain isn't a person. It isn't, you know, it doesn't have a liver and all that kind of crap. It needs the body to have all those necessary parts. It doesn't have arms and legs and blah, 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 blah. And, my liver doesn't have a brain. And so, yes, it's a system, okay? The system is part of the functionality. It's inputs and outputs, and everything's going to have inputs and outputs. That's any kind of complexity. I can put any group of atoms together into a Petri dish, and I could throw something in, and depending on what atoms I put in the dish, I'll get different things coming out of the dish. So any system could be thought of as having a personality, but it's not a personality like a human's personality. It's not a, you know, it's just a reflexive function. And a reflex isn't a whole nervous system creating feelings and sensations and being able to compile and process information. A calculator doesn't have good day, bad day. Calculator doesn't have an emotional problem. I mean, it's not a living thing, and it's not a feeling thing, okay? It might be a good processing thing. And faking it isn't doing it, so that's another thing. This guy doesn't even know what a Turing test is. The whole video is just full of nonsense. He goes from the computer program life, you know, where you create simple rules and you create some complexity, and, you know, extrapolates that into, well, if we just let those simple rules evolve, I make a brain, I make a computer. Well, that never happened. Okay, the game doesn't do that. You have to add a lot more rules before you end up with anything sophisticated enough to do what our brains do, what a neuron does. You don't make neurons. Anyway, so it's just all these fake premises that you can, you know, you can't do that. But clearly, out of 100 elements, okay, atomic structures dumped on a planet, for example, it is possible to evolve, okay, machines that can eventually do information processing and sensation. And that's what we're an example of. And those are two, obviously, you could say, you could point out the obvious reasons why they would be advantageous. The information collection, you can understand why that exists, because, damn, it's really good to understand your history and the history of other organisms and how they dealt with saber-toothed tiger or whatever, and to know the tricks, you know what button to push to cancel whatever's in your way, to clean your water, so to speak, to find the cleanest water. I mean, all this information stuff is very valuable, so you can understand why we collect that. You know, you could turn into a chimp thing in the sense of learning how to pull the termites out of the ground. And then the sensation thing, I would argue, you can understand is just the idea of reward and punishment. And that anything that learns needs reward and punishment. It needs to be rewarded when it gets right answers and punished when it gets wrong answers, because the answers are not immediate. So this goes to, you know, another Hassenfelder video where she was talking about studies with birds and, you know, birds being smart enough to learn, having the capacity to put off immediate gratification for a future, okay, where they'll get more for their money. So instead of throwing their quarter in the machine when it says, give me a quarter, I'll give you a marshmallow, they understand, okay, that if they wait and don't fall for the seduction, that the machine will offer them two marshmallows if they wait. If they wait, the machine gets desperate and it says, okay, I'll give you two marshmallows. So if you wait, you can get double the reward. And that's why we have reward and punishment. That's why we have a brain that learns, put off your immediate gratification. I'm hungry. I want to eat. But I put it off because I know, well, if I wait an hour and a half, the bears all go to sleep and, you know, they all go home and I can go out and pick raspberries. You know, so if I wait, I'll survive. If I need to immediately get gratified, you know, I don't survive. And that's why reward and punishment is important, is you have to be rewarded for your patience. You have to be, it's just this inhibition system, you know, a system of desire and inhibition and conflict. And that's what our sensations are primarily for. Now, of course, a ton of our sensations are just accidents of the fact that nature isn't smart enough to make us feel only when necessary. So we feel a bunch of unnecessary bad feelings, pain and suffering for events we can't do anything about. We get punished when we didn't do anything wrong. We weren't thinking badly. So anyway, I don't want to talk about this. This isn't, you know, these videos aren't science. It's disgusting that people are giving these people airtime. Yuck. I mean, it's just really, yeah. So with all these flat earth debunkers, I don't know why they're not debunking this crap. because this is crap. Okay, consciousness does not resonate in octaves like music. It doesn't happen. It's nonsense. It's baby talk. It's silly. It's not science. Well, anyway, it's not reasonable. It's a way for people to make a living, I guess. You know, just talk fabulistic baby talk, and there will be an audience. Yuck. Alright, so anyway, enough of a video, I guess. So, yeah, that's enough. Fuck it. So, this has been at draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also. But, again, there are no people willing to go into a back-and-forth conversation regarding these little elements of truth, these statements people make, and to argue them in some more complete, more rigorous, more logically coherent manner. And such. So, unfortunately, very little intelligent life on this planet.